Veritas Academy was chosen by Niche as the number one Christian and private school in Northern Virginia and third in the state of Virginia. Have coffee with the headmaster every Tuesday morning. Schedule your visit now. VeritasAcademyDC.com. VeritasAcademyDC.com.
On News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
O'Connor and Company.
W-M-A-L. It's 6:07. You're listening to O'Connor and Company this Wednesday morning in the nation's capital, and we've got plenty more to discuss. We're just 1 hour into it, Andrew Langer, and I feel like we've already delivered about three shows worth of data.
There's just so much going on, Larry. I mean, we are coming to the July 4th weekend. News is supposed to slow down. Oh, and let's not forget, we've got more Supreme Court decisions coming out today, too.
Oh, I know. It's extraordinary. Coming up at 6:35, Cal Thomas will be our guest. 7:05, Dave Bossi on yesterday's primaries and the upcoming Maryland primary. 8:05, Mark Paoletta. He, of course, has this new book about Clarence Thomas. We'll get his take on yesterday's hearings, as well as whether Ginny Thomas might show up at that hearing. 8:35, Julie Kelly will join us. She has certainly been dissecting what this committee has been doing. She's basically the voice of the minority party there at the panel that isn't allowed to have a voice. That's all coming up, as I just mentioned. Andrew Langer, who is saving the world on a daily basis with his podcast. If you're going to save the world, Andrew, it's going to be through a podcast. Right?
Listen, we are going to have a great show later on this week, hopefully going to be joined by our good friend Matt Schlapp to talk about the yesterday's hearing and what Hillary Clinton had to say about Justice Thomas and about the left exploding itself over the Dobbs decision.
Yeah. Oh, great. Looking forward to that download. Once again, the podcast is Andrew and
Jerry Save the World.
Jerry Save the World. Yeah, Jerry. I couldn't remember Jerry's name. Let's face it. He's just riding on your coattails. All right. So let's get to this other part of the testimony of Cassidy Hutchins, because we've already explained how the idea that Donald Trump assaulted a Secret Service agent and tried to take the wheel of the presidential limousine or whatever car he was in. I think there's some evidence to show that he was in the SUV, which, by the way, also undermines her testimony because she said that he was in the limo in the Beast, but there is photographic evidence to show that they actually brought him to the Ellipse. I mean, what? It's about 700 feet or 700 yards, I should say, from the White House to the Ellipse. They brought him in the SUV. So that's already rather unbelievable, and there are people that she claimed told her that story about him commandeering the steering wheel or attempting to do so, and a CIA agent as well as another a Secret Service agent and a lead person in the vehicle who are willing to testify under oath that that did not happen. So that already we have questions about. But then there's this moment here. Take a listen.
Where I overheard the president say something to the effect of, you know, I don't effing care that they have weapons. They're not here to hurt.
Oh, excuse me. Hey, Michael, I just had a failure here. If you can play that cut for me, that's cut 5, please, Michael, if you can get a chance to.
Where I overheard the president say something to the effect of, you know, I don't effing care that they have weapons. They're not here to hurt me. Take the effing mags away. Let my people in. They can march to the Capitol from here. Let the people in. Take the effing mags away.
Just to be clear, Ms. Hutchinson, is it your understanding that the president wanted to take the mags away and said that the armed individuals were not there to hurt him?
That's a fair assessment.
All right. So now this suggests that the president, I mean, it's pretty clear. It's not just a suggestion. It's an allegation that the president had a full understanding that the people in the crowd were armed and that he didn't want those people to be screened because he wanted them to march on the Capitol armed, ready for some level of insurrection, right? So, Andrew, do we have records of arrests being made that day of armed individuals at the Capitol?
Well, not armed individuals at the Capitol. I mean, here's the thing that gets me, right? And let's start with something we talked about in the last hour, right? If there were people with AR-15s or other firearms at this rally, right, where we're talking about the magnometers, whatever you want to call them, the mags, there would be pictures of this. But you go back and you look, I pulled this up. This is from NBC News, January 13th, 2021. So a contemporaneous news account. Stun guns, stinger whips, and a crossbow. What police found on the Capitol protesters. Now, again, right, this is January 13th. One would think that if there had been actual firearms found on people who were at the rally or up at the Capitol, this would have been reported. There would have been pictures. Now, there were people who were arrested for having weapons in their cars and happened to be in entering secure areas or what have you. There are stories of this, but there is no story about people being at the rally with firearms. And again, this calls into question, right? As we've been saying, there are various elements of Hutchison's testimony that are moving towards, veering towards being false.
Yeah.
And then you have to question the other elements of this. And especially, by the way, in light of the very odd tweet from Mick Mulvaney, the former chief of staff, sort of giving credence to every aspect of her testimony. Well, no, we really have to go and peel these things back.
Right. Each one needs to be held up and scrutinized. And by the way, I had said that most of her testimony was hearsay, which most of it was, by the way, including the scene in the Secret Service. This one she claims she overheard herself again.
Or I overheard the president say something to the effect of.
I overheard the president say, and then she has to go to something to the effect of. So we don't know how seared in her memory the statement was when she has to paraphrase it, number one. Number two, again, it should be pointed out that there are contemporaneous reports that she still, after January 6th, wanted a job with the president in Mar-a-Lago. But let's go back to this report from NBC News at the time when you say dozens of guns and thousands of rounds of ammunition from seven people were arrested after the Capitol Hill riot. Were they actually on the grounds of the Capitol, or were these in their cars and they left the ammunition and those weapons in their cars as they went to the rally?
Right. There was this one story of a couple of guys who'd come up from Virginia to the rally, and they pulled into what they thought was a public parking garage, and turns out that it wasn't. They were asked if they had firearms. It turns out, yeah, they had their own firearms in the car, and that was that sort of triggered the investigation.
Let me just pause for a moment. They pulled up to this lot, and there was a uniformed officer, either Capitol. I mean, who knows? There's like eight different jurisdictions, right? And they said, "Do you have any weapons?" And they immediately volunteered that information and said, "Yes, actually, we do."
Yes,
this doesn't sound like a plot.
That's exactly it. That's exactly right. A security guard stopped the car and asked whether they had any weapons inside. Snell, who's a private security guard, had a handgun in his backpack. Wolf told, and then somebody else, a guy named Wolf, was also in the car. Wolf told the guard that he had a gun, a Glock 9mm with 12 rounds in the magazine. And by the way, they said that they did it because they were driving through some dangerous parts of Virginia for the ride up, and they wanted to be secure. And
specifically,
they were going to
let me give you the quote, because I think many of our Virginian listeners might relate to this. He said, "Sometimes you got to go through Richmond, and you never know what might happen. That place used to be the murder capital of the world."
Yes.
And so, I mean, so you're telling me a group of Virginian guys were heading up to the Capitol for the rally, and they had weapons in their cars just in case they were driving through Richmond.
Yes.
And so again, this doesn't necessarily connect to the idea that Trump was speaking of those who had, you know, he was sure that there were armed insurrectionists there at the rally, and he didn't want them screened because he wanted them to take the Capitol by force with this armada, this battalion of armed insurrectionists.
That's right. And let's also get into this idea of okay, so Donald Trump, now it looks like Donald Trump wanted to march to the Capitol with his supporters. And you've got everybody who's viewing it, and of course you've got folks who want to view it in the least favorable light. Oh, he's going to lead them in the insurrection. Well, maybe, just maybe, he was also wanting to go up there because he didn't want things to get ugly.
Yeah.
He knew that there might be a possibility. He wanted to make sure that they took his admonition to behave peacefully and patriotically to heart.
Which is, by the way, exactly what he did say at the rally.
Yes.
And what Liz Cheney omitted when they replayed the information. Listen, I'm always I'm caught in the middle whenever somebody says, you know, Donald Trump said this thing and it sounds outrageous and crazy. And yet, I mean, Donald Trump says outrageous and crazy things sometimes, right? I guess the more important thing is what really happened.
Yes.
Which is what this committee is supposed to, well, we're told is supposed to be about. But it surely doesn't look that way, especially when they put out a witness like this without actually properly vetting. This was an emergency. They had to get this woman out there, and already so much of what she said has been debunked. All right, again, I want to remind you, we've got Dave Bossi coming up. We've got Mark Poletta. At 8:35, we've got Julie Kelly, who has been probably the best columnist out there researching and debunking so much of what's going on this committee. That's all coming up. But right now, it's 6:16.
Weeknights with Mark Levin, 6 to 9 p.m.
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL, making sense of the news.
No, I hate the fact that within a 72-hour period, Andrew Langer, I have been completely envious of my colleagues here on WMAL on Friday. Friday, I was very jealous of Vince Colonnais that he got to do the afternoon drive program right in the middle of the or right after the Dobbs decision came
out.
And then yesterday, Hillary Clinton appeared with Gayle King on CBS Morning News or CBS This Morning, whatever they call the CBS Morning Show. And she appeared in the final 15 minutes of our program, so we didn't get to it. Chris Plant was all over it yesterday. So now I get to be jealous of Chris Plant as well. I had to wait an entire 24 hours to get to Hillary Clinton. But it was worth the wait because, my gosh, was she delicious yesterday. Talking about her pal Clarence Thomas and the Dobbs decision.
I went to law school with him. Mm-hmm. He's been a person of grievance for as long as I've known him. Resentment, grievance, anger.
Hold on. Wow. Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't Clarence Thomas literally grow up in the segregationist South?
Yes. Yes. In two different very poor black communities as well. Yes.
And it's funny. You got people like Ibram X. Kendi, who peddles this whole anti-racism, critical race theory kind of mantra injects it into the racial discussions in America. And he, of course, is born of privilege. I believe his parents both have advanced college degrees. He has never wanted for anything in his life. He has been able to enjoy the post-Martin Luther King, post-segregationist America that really has tried to value the idea that we judge people by the content of their character instead of the color of their skin. He's had so much handed him through academia, through the ability to be able to write books that are outrageous. If you dare say that Ibram X. Kendi is a person of grievance for as long as he's known him, resentment, grievance, and anger, you're immediately tagged a racist. Maybe it's me, but when you call someone like Clarence Thomas, who has had to come from poverty and the segregationist Jim Crow South and achieve at the highest levels, when you call him somebody who is full of resentment, grievance, and anger, maybe that's racist. Maybe, Andrew, Hillary Clinton is racist.
Well, you know, and it's interesting you say that because, you know, if the shoe was on the other foot, right, we have this whole discussion. We've had this discussion in America about the stereotype or the caricature of women of color as being angry, right? And we are told and rightly so that is a truly negative stereotype. For Hillary Clinton to sort of perpetuate this is galling. But I want to take a step back and say, you know something? There is something untoward for someone of Hillary Clinton's stature, right? To start talking about the way somebody might have been according to her perception of that person in law school. And I don't know what kind of interaction Hillary Clinton may have had with Clarence Thomas when they were in law school. Mm-hmm. But again, sort of to go back and sort of say, well, I knew that this person is the same person he was when he was in law school. That is a galling statement. And then I want to add this to it.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, you look at this description. She says he's been a person of grievance, of resentment, grievance, and anger. And I'm going to say it, Larry. Doesn't that describe Hillary Clinton to a T, a person of resentment, grievance, and anger?
Are you kidding? She's America's sweetheart, Andrew. How dare you?
That's the irony, right, is that anybody who has met or has known Clarence Thomas – right, we're going to talk about this later.
Opposite about
he is a happy warrior for these issues.
Yeah. By the way, Hillary Clinton went on to discuss the real ramifications of the Dobbs decision.
And he has signaled in the past to lower courts, to state legislatures, to find cases, pass laws, get them up. I may not win the first, the second, or the third time, but we're going to keep at it.
So you're saying people pay attention to
this?
Yes,
the people he is speaking to, which are the, you know, right-wing, very conservative judges and justices and state legislatures. And the thing that is, well, there's so many things about it that are deeply distressing, But women are going to die, Gail. Oh, women will die.
So two things here. First of all, it sounds to me, Andrew, like she's painting a picture of what can only be described as a vast right-wing conspiracy.
Yes.
In the judiciary. But secondly, women are going to die, Gail. Women are going to die. Was it that moment when Gail leaned forward on the chair and said, I'm sorry, Secretary Clinton, but could you please define what a woman is?
Yes. But let's remember, right, that it is a tried and true tactic on the part of the left. When Democrats are in power, Democratic regulatory agencies, in order to advance public policy, they encourage left-wing groups to sue federal agencies so that they can settle and create new law. This is what they do.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
As usual, what they're accusing us of doing is exactly what they're doing.
And the thing that is, well, there's so many things about it that are deeply distressing, but women are going to die, Gail. Women will die.
Andrew Langer, you've been in this game for a while as an analyst and pundit, and you even give, you know, political advice now and again to candidates if they ask it. I'm sure you'd be willing to advise a candidate now and again.
Now and again.
Op-ed in The Hill, penned by Juan Williams. Hillary Clinton can rescue Democrats in the midterms. Democrats need a strong voice, ready to fight and restore women's rights now that the Supreme Court has struck down Roe v. Wade. There's only one, Hillary Clinton. So in other words, he thinks it would be great for Democrats to make the midterms all about Hillary, and I 100% agree.
I agree with that as well. I mean, listen, what I love is that, you know, you're going to have Democrats who are going to look at this and they're like, why would we listen to Juan Williams give us advice as to who we ought to have stepping for us going into the midterms? Again, this just shows you how out of touch. Now, listen, I get it. The Democrats are going to do this, and what Hillary Clinton was saying about the other things that Justice Thomas is doing and how he's trying to create this vast right-wing conspiracy, as you pointed out a moment ago, that you know, this is going to play in. But again, right, in order to win elections, you can't just get your base out, right? You know, politics is a game of addition and multiplication, not division and subtraction. And they are not going to get the vast majority of Americans out there if their strategy is abortion and January 6th.
And Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
It's 6:29. Cal Thomas next.
Why choose proven quality sleep from Sleep Number? Because our Sleep Number 360 smart bed is really smart. It senses your movement and automatically adjusts to help keep you both comfortable. Plus, it's temperature balancing, so you stay cool. It's even smart enough to know exactly how long, how well, and when you slept. And to help you get almost 30 minutes more restful sleep per night. Sleep Number takes care of the signs. All you have to do is sleep. Don't miss our 4th of July special. The Queen Sleep Number 360 C2 smart bed is only $8.99. Plus, free home delivery when you add a base. Ends Monday. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
At Lowe's, every pro is an MVP to us. It doesn't matter how big or small your business is. If you're a plumber, roofer, electrician, or remodeler, your business earns back when you spend, gets exclusive offers, and paint rewards. It all adds up to help drive your business. Join Lowe's MVP's Pro Rewards and Partnership Program today. Minimum purchase required. Earnings and paint rewards awarded as Lowe's e-gift cards. Exclusions, restrictions, and more terms apply. Valid through 12/31/22. See Lowe's.com/L/pro-loyalty-terms. Subject to change. U.S. only.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL.
News now.
WMAL. Getting you where you need to go with everything you need to know. It's America's Morning Show, O'Connor and Company here on WMAL. Coming up at 7:05, Dave Bossie will join us to talk about yesterday's primaries and a preview of the upcoming Maryland primary. 8:05, Mark Paoletta wrote a new book on Clarence Thomas. We'll talk to him about Hillary Clinton's comments about the justice. 8:35, Julie Kelly writing on the January 6th committee yesterday. Andrew Langer is with us this
morning.
Good morning,
everybody.
Andrew. And joining us right now is Cal Thomas. And Cal, of course, syndicated columnist extraordinaire, political pundit. Over the years, Cal, I have seen you speak passionately and from the heart on the issue of life and your opposition to Roe v. Wade. So it must have been quite a moment for you to see what happened on Friday with the Dobbs decision. Did you think you'd see this day?
Well, I was hopeful, Larry, and I think a lot of people were. People, as I wrote in my column yesterday, who are no longer with us, like Dr. Mildred Jefferson, the first black woman to graduate from Harvard Medical School, Phyllis Schlafly, Nellie Cray, who organized the March for Life. None of them lived to see this day. But then a lot of people didn't live to see the Emancipation Proclamation or civil rights legislation. So these great moral and political and legal issues sometimes take generations to resolve. But one of the things I said in my column yesterday, and I defined the word unalienable used by Thomas Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence. And I think the meaning is very, very important. Unalienable means not transferable to another or not capable of being taken away or denied. That is precisely what the Supreme Court did in 1973 when it took away and denied the right of unborn children to live. Now, abortion is going to continue, of course. They got the pills out there and other things. It's not going to stop any more than prohibition prohibited, you know, some people from getting illegal booze. But I think, you know, there will be people who will be born and women who will be glad they gave birth. Let's interview them in 20 years and see if they think so.
Great point. And Andrew, real fast, a point of personal privilege. You know, Cal, maybe it's me, but whenever you mention Thomas Jefferson and unalienable, I only think of that great scene from the musical 1776 when he and John Adams debate. It's the final debate before they sign the Declaration, whether it's unalienable or inalienable.
And as a William and Mary alumnus, I certainly side with the Bard of Monticello.
Yeah, I understand. Fair enough, Andrew.
Let me ask you this, Cal. You know, sort of talking about this from the policy perspective and the left's just completely over the top response to all of this, it's not just that in many states nothing changes, but also it returns it. It allows the opportunity for states that want to have more liberal abortion rights to do these things. It gives them that flexibility, doesn't it?
Well, it does, but, you know, the Constitution, the preamble begins, we the people, not you the government, not you unelected judges who are unaccountable. The polls are all over the place on this. It depends on your knowledge of the situation, whether you've ever seen a sonogram, whether you've ever attended a pregnancy help center and heard the testimonies of women, as I have. There was an interesting poll that's not being picked up, naturally, by the Washington Post, by the Trafalgar Group, which was one of America's most accurate pollsters in 2016, 18, 20, and 21, the various elections. It shows that a majority, 57.6% of American voters, believe abortion should only be legal in specific and limited circumstances. Yeah. The CBS poll says the opposite. You know, it all depends on how you ask the question and what the level of understanding is of the person who's responding.
There's also another political phenomenon going on this year. There's a recent report of the New York Post that I believe over a million registered voters have changed their party affiliation from Democrat to Republican this year. You don't see that very often, Cal. I wonder if you can sort of interpret that for us in terms of if this is a question of the economy, if it's a question of Joe Biden himself and his failures. And also, will the politics of abortion maybe change that? A lot of people are saying, oh, this is the worst thing for the Republicans, the fact that this is now a top issue this November.
Well, you know, Larry, the things that affect people on the ground are the things that move their votes. You remember when Marion Barry, mayor for life, was mayor of Washington, D.C., and we had, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago, that enormous snowstorm, and Barry went out to, was found, I think, in Palm Springs or something, having a good time in the sun, while people in the Washington, D.C. area couldn't get their streets plowed. Now, getting your streets plowed, being able to fill up your tank with gasoline at a reasonable price, buying bread and vegetables and meat at the grocery store when you can afford it, are big items for voters. And they don't care a lot about all these other things, you know, Ukraine and abortion. When they can't fill up their tank or buy food to feed their family, that's going to move their vote. And I think that's why you're seeing these figures you just mentioned.
Cal, let's turn our attention to this other stunning decision in the court. I would love to get your thoughts on the Coach Kennedy decision, the religious freedom decision, and just what that means moving
forward.
Well,
the court has been really against the free expression of religion, which is also guaranteed. You know, this whole idea of church-state separation. Yeah. When the founders wrote the First Amendment, they were trying to keep from establishing, like the Church of England, an official federal church. And they added the free exercise should not be prohibited. These are not contradictory, they're complementary. So all that means is there's no official state church, but anybody, whether you're religious or not, or whatever denomination you are, ought to be freely able to express yourself. This coach, by himself, or I think two or three times, got out, bent his knee on the after the game, by the way, and just said a prayer. Maybe it was for thanks that our players weren't injured. And the court said that's perfectly legit. And the idea that he might penalize players who didn't pray with him, there's no evidence for that at all.
I thought taking a knee was an okay thing in football.
Worked for Colin Kaepernick, right?
Yeah, sure. Kyle Thomas, always good to talk with you, my friend.
All
thanks
right,
for
guys.
Joining us.
I went to law school with him.
Mm-hmm.
He's been a person of grievance for as long as I've known him. Resentment, grievance, anger.
Oh, yes. And who would know other than that woman, Ryan?
Yes.
I mean, it's just ludicrous on the face of it.
Yeah. So this full court press against Clarence Thomas in particular, singling him out, identifying him. He didn't even write this decision, by the way.
Yeah.
It was an Alito decision on Dobbs, but they're going after him. They always have. It is a delicious irony, by the way, that Joe Biden's one memorable moment in his entire 50-year career is trying to attack Clarence Thomas in that catastrophically horrific abomination of a judiciary confirmation hearing back in 1991. He was the engineer of the whole Anita Hill fiasco. He couldn't stop Clarence Thomas that day. And here now we are, fast forward 30 years later, Clarence Thomas is the senior justice on the court and had his name right on that decision, finally, once and for all, getting rid of Roe v. Wade. What a heroic story Clarence Thomas is.
That absolutely. You know, it's funny because I remember doing a piece, the criticism that was levied against Clarence Thomas after the 2000 election, right? And it's always, you're absolutely correct, Larry, because it's been since his confirmation, there has been the criticism, he doesn't ever speak. He doesn't ask questions.
Right.
He's sleeping on the bench. They have been wanting to drum Clarence Thomas out of the Supreme Court basically since Clarence Thomas stepped on the bench.
Yeah.
And you're right, I think, to say that Hillary Clinton's comments yesterday smack in no small amount of the I was going to say soft racism or the soft bigotry of the left, but I don't even think it's all that soft.
Oh, yeah. No, listen, when you say that the one black person on the court, which he was for right up until this latest nominee, the one black person on the court is lazy, falls asleep, doesn't work very hard, isn't very smart, doesn't ask any questions. We see right through you. And by the way, the caricatures, the cartoons, the attacks, the N-word flying around about him this past week after the Dobbs decision, it's very easy for the veil to drop.
And all of the attacks on Ginny Thomas are also engineered to put pressure on him. It has very little to do, right? And there have always been the accusations about Ginny Thomas's sort of mental state.
That's right.
And again, it's designed to try to pressure them out of public life.
Or that Ginny Thomas is really the ones pulling the strings. She's the radical conservative, you know, because you need a white person to control the black justice. All right, well, let's get to Ginny Thomas. Ginny Thomas, of course, has been raised up as a potential witness or target, depending on your perspective, by the January 6th committee. When last we checked with Ginny Thomas, she raised her hand and said, oh, I can't. I would love to sit before this committee. Please put me under oath. I'd love to set some things straight. Mark Poiletta, Thomas's lawyer, now says that even though she is absolutely willing to speak, he doesn't understand the need to have the committee speak with Ginny Thomas. And he's quoted now in a Daily Caller piece saying, before I can recommend that she meet with you, I'm asking the committee to provide a better justification for why specifically Mrs. Thomas's testimony is relevant to the committee's legislative purpose. I do like that because there is no legislative purpose to this committee.
Well, right. They have to lay the foundation as to what she's going to testify to. This is not supposed to be a fishing expedition. There's supposed to be some kind of purpose at work. And presumably, Ginny Thomas's testimony is supposed to lend some kind of weight to the narrative that they're pushing. It is well within her rights. And boy, you know, kudos to Paletta for just writing this letter in these terms and laying it out there. Yeah. I want to know what it is you're calling my client up there for.
That's right. And what is the purpose of this committee at all in the first place? And certainly as a legislative body and entity. And I want to remind you at 8:05, the aforementioned attorney for Ginni Thomas, Mark Pauletta, will be our guest. And we'll talk about this and a couple of other things. One other attack on Clarence Thomas.
Oh, yes.
Students and faculty at George Washington University has begun a campaign to try to remove the justice from their faculty. He's an adjunct professor at George Washington University. You know, pretty cool for GW Law to have a sitting Supreme Court justice, the longest serving Supreme Court justice, 30 years now on the bench, as one of their adjunct professors. I'm sure that it's another reason why they can raise their tuition to such a level that it is literally the most expensive college in America. Well, there has been a campaign to try to remove him because of the Dobbs decision. But Jonathan Turley, who is on the faculty over at GW, he announces now that the university will stand by Clarence Thomas, and they reject this campaign, and they have said, no, we want Clarence Thomas on our faculty, and he will remain there, which is sadly a rare sign of strength and principle from a college university.
Yeah, intestinal fortitude there. And let's remember, right, if you're raising lawyers or you're raising students to be good lawyers, you want them to understand both sides of an issue. They have to be able to do that, and this is part of it.
I think if you're raising children and young people and students to do anything in our society, yes, you should prepare them to hear both sides of an issue. But certainly as a lawyer. In fact, back in the good old days, you know, in the Socratic method, aren't you compelled to argue on both sides of an issue even if you don't agree with it? Don't they have you argue it? Because that's what a lawyer is called to do.
100%. And if anybody spent any time in the debate world, the high school debate world, you know that you're sort of handed this idea of arguing either pro or con. You really don't get to choose.
That's right. Unlike here on Talk Radio, when we can completely choose what we want to debate, and we're damn good at it. It's 6:53.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.